Paul Harris Show on the air everywhere for this Monday afternoon, the final Monday of the month of November. And that is David Bowie from the Ziggy Stardust years. David Bowie's pictured from that era on the cover of a new book by my next guest. The book is called Uncommon People, The Rise and Fall of the Rock Stars. It's written by David Hepworth, who joins me now live from London. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You've got some great stories here, but I want to start with David Bowie, since you have him right on the cover of your book. It's interesting to see him emerging almost in Ziggy-like gear out of the back of a car, and he's surrounded by dozens, if not hundreds, of young people, teens and 20-somethings. And if you looked at that picture, you'd think, wow, David Bowie must have been the biggest star in the world. But I didn't know until reading your book that there was a time where David Bowie was not actually pulling in big crowds and was thinking about quitting the business.
Well, yeah, I think it reminds you of the fact that rock wasn't always a huge business, you know what I mean? I think particularly in the 1970s, it was a subculture. And so that picture was taken, I think, in 1973, when he's at the end of his Ziggy Stardust tour, and it's when he decides he doesn't want to be Ziggy Stardust anymore. But to give you an idea of the scale of his success, I spoke to one of the guys, one of the teenagers who's surrounding his car, who was 15 at the time, and he just took the day off school because David Bowie was playing at Hammersmith, and he went down there with his friends and bought a ticket, you know, at the box office to turn up and play and appear at that show. So, you know, the world wasn't always kind of, credit card ordering and, you know, massive over demand for live shows. You know, it was a subculture still back in those days.
Yeah. One of the overriding themes of the book is how rock and roll stardom is certainly hard work. I mean, the ones who work the hardest at it, and you use Bruce Springsteen as an example of somebody who really, really works hard at his craft. But isn't there also an element of being in the right place at the right time? And I'm thinking of people like Janis Joplin at Monterey, where Clive Davis happened to see her. That's a big part of becoming a success, isn't it?
Oh, undoubtedly. There's always a certain amount of luck in there. But you know, I think Janis Joplin is a good case, and Bruce Springsteen also. But what those people have is immense determination. And also, they kind of built their personality and then kind of built their music around their personality. And they projected that personality into giant arenas, you know, in front of large crowds. And that's the kind of the key rock star game, I think, is to build yourself before you become a star. But luck undoubtedly plays a part in it. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you even say in the book that rock stars are often rock stars before they make their first rock record.
Yeah, well, I think a classic case of this is Elvis Presley. You know, and Elvis Presley was kind of, you know, people pointed at him on the streets of Memphis when he was like 17 years old because he just looked like a creature from an outer galaxy. And, you know, being a rock star, kind of justified him in that kind of behavior, you know. And the young John Lennon and Paul McCartney, you know, when they're 15 years old in Liverpool, the way they dressed and the way they carried themselves and the kind of records they light meant that the few other people in Liverpool who were like that picked them out very early on. You know, they could see that these people were just a bit different. And I suppose that's why I wanted to call the book Uncommon People, you know, that they rock stardom is a thing. It's a thing that people can invent themselves on, and they start off as common people, but then they have a kind of twist. So they come from the same soil as the rest of us, but they present a slight twist on the normal personality.
Yeah, you even write about them creating their own myths, and I think the best example you use of that is this guy from Hibbing, Minnesota named Robert Zimmerman.
No better case of this than Robert Zimmerman, you know, who sets off and goes to the University of Minnesota and sort of changes his name to Bob Dylan and then goes to New York and arrives in New York and people ask him where he came from. He said, oh, you know, I've been hopping freight trains for the last, you know, 5 years. You know, I was taught to play guitar by a one-eyed black man called Wigglefoot. You know, I ran away with a circus repeatedly. All this stuff was just nonsense. But nobody really challenged it, because the thing is, we wanted to believe it. And it also, it legitimized his art, you know, it allowed him to sing the songs he did in the way he did, because he'd invented this massive persona. And I went to see him a few years ago at the Albert Hall, and I was on the second row, and I looked at him very closely for about 2 hours. And it struck me, I've been watching him and thinking about him for, you know, 50 years, and I don't really know any more about him than I did in 1962. And that is the triumph of rock stardom. That's the triumph of rock mystique. And nobody's got it better than Bob Dylan.
I bet in 1962 you could understand him better in concert.
That's a separate argument.
I get the feeling from the book that you believe that now, here in the year 2017, rock and roll is dead, that there are no more rock stars.
Well, I think the music continues, but I think the age of the rock era has passed, just like the jazz era, you know, passed before it, because it can't last forever. And also, people start repeating themselves. You know, there's a limit to what you can do in the fourth decade of rock and roll to do anything new to it. And also, I think hip-hop has taken over. And also, I think that kind of social media has made it pretty much impossible to be a rock star in the way that these people used to be. You know, that I think if you went around behaving in the year 2017 the way that, I don't know, Jimmy Page or these people behaved in the early 70s, I think they'd be regularly turning up on the television to apologize. I'm serious about this, you know, because we live in a very censorious age, you know, whereas these people didn't. And a lot of the things that we now revere rock stars for were very controversial at the time they did them. And we now think it's safe to like these people. It wasn't particularly safe at the time, but they could get away with things that you wouldn't be able to get away with now.
Yeah, you're talking about like a hotel room destroying by Keith Moon and the other members of The Who, or some of the stories.
Well, you know, you look at what's going on, you know, post-Harvey Weinstein, you know, there have been no major music names in that frame, you know, so far. If you'd been having that kind of campaign 20, 30 years ago, there would certainly have been many of them.
Yeah, but that's been, David, because I think rock stars have always treated women so well.
No, they certainly haven't. But you know, the world has changed, and you know, if you were to write the story of you know, contemporary pop music nowadays, it would be very much, it probably would be dominated by women.
Yeah.
Whereas in the era of a rock star, it tended to be dominated by men. So this is the story of a lot of men mainly.
Yeah, and since it's about men, how much of that history of that music, rock and roll, is really just about guys trying to get the attention of women?
Oh, a huge part. Absolutely enormous part. You know, there's simply no cases of people who picked up the guitar at the age of 15 and weren't massively motivated by the attention they might be able to get from the opposite sex, because that was just one of those magical things that occurred in the rock era. It hadn't happened before. You know, it was absolutely huge in the rock era, and they certainly did it to win the admiration of women. And they all, almost without exception, all married, you know, to improve their status in life. If you look at what they did, they all married up. It was all a massive dating campaign.
Paul Harris talking with David Hepworth. The book is called Uncommon People, The Rise and Fall of the Rock Stars. You write in the book about how rock and roll itself did change. I'm surprised to hear you saying that it's essentially over now, because there have been times when rock has been declared dead at other times. For instance, in the late 70s, when punk came out of your country, England, and invaded the American shores, there were a lot of straight-up rock and roll bands that got passed by because of the Elvis Costellos and Joe Jacksons and Ian Dury's and the Clash and the Sex Pistols and others who presented a new kind of music to America. Don't we have those kind of eras within the rock and roll history?
I don't think we do anymore. You know, I think if anything revolutionary was happening in music now, it wouldn't be happening in rock and roll. I think it'd be, you know, it'd be happening in hip hop or grime, as we call it over here at the moment, or it'd be happening in pop music. I think the kind of three chord rock and roll is, you know, it was pretty, it's a worked out scene. It's very, very difficult to do anything new in that area. I may be completely wrong, you know, but, you know, I think it will continue. The music will be there, just like jazz is still there. But jazz is not the mainstream of popular music as it was in the 30s and the 1940s. Mm-hmm. Those things don't last forever.
You know, I was just talking to my wife yesterday. We were driving in the car, and we heard Shattered by the Stones from 1978 on their Some Girls album. And in those days, I was working in rock radio, and at that time, when a new album would come out by a supergroup like the Rolling Stones, the radio station would go on the air and say, okay, we're going to be playing songs from this for you every hour, all day long, to introduce you to these different songs, and then at midnight tonight, we're going to play the whole album through for you, which became a little problematic because of one of the lyrics in the song Some Girls, which we can't get into here, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I don't think there's contemporary radio that treats rock and roll with that reverence anymore.
Also, you know, people have got access to that music themselves.
Ah.
You know, they don't need it to be played to them in quite the same way.
You don't have to wait till midnight.
In those days, you know, music was hard to get. And when it was hard to get, it was massively valued. Now it's really easy to get. In fact, you might say it's impossible to avoid. So consequently, it is not valued in quite the same way. It couldn't possibly be. But isn't it funny that, you know, you mentioned Shattered, you know, when did you say that was 1978 or whatever?
Yeah.
And you know, that's Mick Jagger's song about he's too old, you know, he's tired, he's had enough.
Right.
You know, and that's a long old time ago, you know. Those guys just kept going, you know, and there they are still in their 70s, still doing it.
With the prevalence of music, as you say, maybe there's too much of it in our lives these days. Is it now easier or harder to get famous?
I think the truth is, a friend of mine says, it's never been easier to play, it's never been harder to win.
Mm.
And I think that's true. I think you can get started in all kinds of spheres a lot more easily than you ever did in the past. But turning that start into fame or status is harder than it's ever been.
Not to mention money.
Well, yeah. Well, you could say that in some sense you need less money than you used to, because you know your access to the market via the internet is a lot simpler than it used to be.
Right.
But you've got to make it stand out. You've got to get cut through very, very quickly. It's really, really hard. You know, the days of, you know, just making it like the Who did or something, you know, in the back of a bus for years up and down the United States, those days have gone. You've got to cut through the culture, and you've got to summit. You're probably going to do it by scandal.
that's very true. But similarly, you've got bands now that may be hugely popular that aren't really that interested in selling their music or getting people to download their songs. They want to get people in the seats for their concerts, where it used to be the live appearances sold the music. Now the music sells the live concerts.
Oh, absolutely, because you can't make any money out of the recorded music, really.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I can remember the days when you bought a Led Zeppelin album, and it was more expensive to buy the album than it was to go and see them live.
Yeah.
You know, that's completely flipped by many times now, you know. So people will pay, you know, $100 or whatever to go and see a major act. Because the audience for rock and roll is bigger than it's ever been. That's the funny thing. It's broader than it was. You know, in the era I'm writing about, in the 60s and 70s and even in the 80s, the audience for live rock and roll was probably between the ages of about 14 and 30.
Yep.
Whereas nowadays, it's between the ages of 10 and 75. it is, you know.
Yeah.
If you go and see a big name act, you look at the crowd and you're seeing two, three, four generations of people.
Right.
It's a different thing, and it's a different experience, because most of those people don't remember whatever the music is at the time that it first came out. They've caught up on it later on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most music is learned, you know, people learn it historically now rather than live in the moment as they used to do.
David, do you think music became less interesting in the 80s and 90s when MTV and corporate America got involved?
I think there's a point where it gets too popular. I think it was too widespread. It was too accessible. When I look back at everything that's happened in the last 50 years, the one thing that I don't miss whatsoever is the video.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think actually it added anything. It was a good advertisement. It was a useful way of making things more popular. I don't think it made anything more memorable. And I don't think it did people's mystique any good in the event. So, you know, I'd be quite happy to rerun the history of rock and roll and just take the videos out. That would be my view.
You realize that by doing so, you're erasing the career of Duran Duran.
Well, they'll get by, I'm sure.
Do you think somebody who's a genuine rule breaker can become a music star today, or do they all have to fit the mold?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, to look at them and, you know, the ones who are making it nowadays, the, you know, the Taylor Swifts and the Ed Sheerans, you know, they're very sharp operators. I don't know that they're mold breakers. I tell you, I've got a picture on my computer, which I look at quite often, of, you know, you must remember that famous picture where Elvis Presley turned up unannounced at the White House.
Yes.
And got a photo, you know, taken with Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'm looking at the president, the rock star, and those were the days when the unpredictable one was the rock star.
That's right.
The world has changed, let me tell you.
Yes. So if the rock star is dead, if we're going by that thesis, who was the last rock star?
Well, yeah, as in my book, yeah, I think the last rock star was Kurt Cobain, since 1994. And I think Kurt Cobain kind of felt the cumulative weight of all the heritage of the rock star, going right back to Elvis Presley and through the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Sex Pistols and all those kind of people. And I think it got too much. It got too big. The pressure he felt to live up to the idea of being a rock star was just something he couldn't deal with. And I think he was the last one.
You don't think Bono qualifies?
Well, I think, you see, Bono, you know, predates that, you know, that Bono was already making it in the 80s, you know. That's the thing you forget with these acts, is how long they've been around, you know. You know, people argue with me sometimes and say, well, what about Oasis, you know? Well, Oasis is 20-some years ago,
yeah.
You know. We forget. These people have very, very long careers nowadays. But no, in my chronology, Kurt Cobain, I think that's the end. I think that's the final rock star. That's my theory. And if you want to argue with the theory, you can buy the book and read it.
I do want to ask you about one more person that you profile. This is the last person you profile in the book. Not a musician. A guy named Mark Andreessen, who is the creator of Mosaic, which is the first widely used web browser. Why include him?
Well, because I just wanted to make the point that that I think the kind of mantle passed from the rock star to the kind of the geek, you know, because that was the beginning of the age of the internet, of social media, you know, which pretty much, you know, destroyed the music industry or destroyed the record industry. And so it indicates that, you know, that we're moving from an era where people bought physical product and went out and bought physical product and treasured it to the era where people just download it, you know. And so I'm not trying to suggest Mark Andreessen was a rock star, but I just wanted to make that point that you know, the end of the rock star is kind of it's concurrent with the beginning of the internet.
He's the enabler of the end?
I think probably, yes, yeah, but I think it was going to happen anyway.
What I think is fascinating about this whole discussion is when we're talking about rock stars era being behind us, you can still have moments where a few months ago we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It sold more copies this year in 2017 than it did in 1967. Now,
is that the case?
Yeah. Well, what's amazing about that is we have so many more people, but I also want to wonder how many people have bought it in every different format since 1967. Because there are people like me who have it in vinyl and stereo, vinyl and mono, cassette, 8-track, CD, digital, it's and on and on and on.
But the only one that matters is the original record.
Yes.
You know, that will never be improved upon. Because vinyl, the long-playing record, we have loads of different music carriers from, you know, go way back to cylinders and 78s and 8-tracks and now downloads and streaming and so forth. But the only format that we still feel any emotional attachment to is the vinyl record.
And does all of this mean also that those two 15-year-olds you talked about earlier, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, with sales continuing like that in the 21st century, would qualify as our most enduring rock stars of all time?
Well, I mean, the Beatles are kind of an exception to all the rules, aren't they? The Beatles are just, the Beatles are like Charlie Chaplin, you know. They're kind of, they completely transcend their field, you know. They make their own rules, you know, but they've never lost their luster for me.
Yeah. The book is called Uncommon People, The Rise and Fall of the Rock Stars. It covers from 1955 forward for four decades of rock and roll until what David Hepworth says was the end of the rock star with Kurt Cobain in 1994. David, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. Thanks for the book and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
David Hepworth here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.